Zeit Gang, you like to watch new stuff, right? I mean, who doesn't? I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama, a new season of The Kardashians starring The Kardashians, of course, and Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with a king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
This summer, don't be left without air conditioning. Call Care Heating and Cooling and get on a care plan to protect your family. With a care plan, you get system maintenance and priority service in case of emergency, giving you peace of mind. Plus, a well-maintained air conditioner runs more efficiently and saves you money. At Care, their service technicians are paid to fix your AC, not sell you a new one. And their award-winning team is available 7 days a week. Call Care today at 1-800-COOLING or book an appointment online at careheatingandcooling.com. When you need a company you can trust.
Hello, the internet, and welcome to season 289, episode 3 of The Daily Zeitgeist, a production of iHeartRadio. This is a podcast where we take a deep dive into America's shared consciousness, and it is Thursday, June 1st, 2023, Gemini season.
Gemini season. Get those, what does it say, like split personalities? That's what the Gemini is. You got two sides. Yeah. Well, also, hey, Jack, just want to say, looking great today because it's National Say Something Nice Day. It's also National Hazelnut Cake Day. It's Global Day of Parents. Shout out all the parents out there. And also for me, National Go Barefoot Day because I seldom wear shoes unless I have to. World Reef Awareness Day, World Milk Day, Pen Pal Day, Nail Polish Day, Heimlich Maneuver Day. It's all happening.
Shout out to the Heimlich Maneuver.
Yeah.
That's a good, I don't remember if it was Radiolab or This American Life, but it was like one of those good formative podcasts, nonfiction podcasts, where they like run through the history of the Heimlich Maneuver. And it was like, yeah, man, people, when they were choking in a restaurant before, you were just like,
there he goes.
Die, I guess. But that's it. And then like the Heimlich thing came in like mid 20th century or so. And I think into like the 60s, 70s era. And then he was like on all the late night shows and stuff being like, guys, this is going to save so many lives. And wow. Sure enough. But then he kind of let the power go to his head and destroy him. Anyways, by the way.
Really?
Yeah, I know. Do you believe it? Gemini season starts May 21st.
Okay.
Ends June 21st. So we've been in Gemini.
We've been in it. Okay. Shout out to all the Gemini.
It is my attraction to the number of Geminis that the world throws in my life. Mm. That is the one thing that makes me believe in.
The last astrology. Like few people that I dated were in the Gemini Cancer zone. Like it's these next two because Cancer's next, right? After I think. So yeah,
I think that's right.
Yeah. Yep. So
and
summer birthday.
Leo. Which is me. My name's Jack O'Brien, aka I have to build a dam cause I'm a beaver. A beaver. That is courtesy of Yo Bro on the Discord, who said, heard the guys talking about making up words for kids songs in the intro today. My 8-year-old recently came up with this to the tune of Imagine Dragons Believer, which is, by the way, the most popular song with children in that age range. Like my 5 and 7-year-old are real dragon heads, imagine heads. I don't know what they're called, but anyways. Yeah, so shout out to you. Shout out to the young Weird Al Yankovics out there. My kids are in a phase where they like fart songs.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Songs made of that use the fart as a primary instrument. I'm thrilled to be joined, as always, by my co-host, Mr. Miles Gray.
Miles Gray, aka
Plumpus Babe. Plumpus Babe, Plumpus Babe. Your thighs are a one in a million. They go on and on and on. You give me a really plump feeling. Ooh. All night long.
Okay, shout out to Dopa Mailman on the Discord. Shout out to the Queen, Aaliyah. Rest in peace. Level yeah. 1 in a million, a.k.a.
Oh, I love it. I love it.
I was on Francesca Fiorentini's podcast, Bituation Room, yesterday, which is a live stream. Somebody came on and said they were there for my plumpers, and it was like right after I had jumped off, and she was... scandalized confused. And did not know what that meant and was grossed out and just a word to.
Did you even tell people you're going to be on Bituation Room?
Or
maybe probably Francesca did because she actually she promotes the guests. Yeah, because I was curious. I'm like, did someone just like I'm on Plump Watch?
I totally forgot I was going to be on it until we started recording yesterday. Anyways, Miles, housekeeping up top. For the first time in the history of the show, we're trying a new publication schedule for the summer. We're going to be doing a mere 8 episodes a week. We're
going to
try
offerings.
Some new episode formats out, some expert episodes. We're going to hear from some listeners, talk with some of you guys. So that will be the new format will be Tuesday morning's episode. There will be one episode on Friday, one episode on Monday. But yeah, and we're still taking anything interesting you can tell us about your job.
We got people who worked at CERN.
We've got some really smart, impressive, interesting listeners.
To the point, I'm like, I don't want to talk to them. They're gonna fucking make me feel dumb as fuck.
Yeah, yeah. No, that person will not. The person who's worked at CERN will not be on the podcast. There's also people with like really boring sounding jobs, but who have really interesting things to say about them.
Yeah. So, that's all the point.
Shout
that's
out
the
to
point.
The listeners.
Yeah, holler at us.
All right. Miles, we are thrilled to be joined by a brilliant journalist, storyteller, CEO, podcast host, whose most recent show, Silence the Radio Murders, can be found everywhere fine podcasts are. Please welcome back to the show, Oz
Voloshin! Thank you. Thank you so much, Jack and Miles. Very nice to be back.
It's wonderful to have you.
Great to have you. Where are you coming to us from, Oz?
I am coming into you from the JV Soho House, which is called Soho Works. It's a co-working space with a Soho House branding, but a WeWork way of life.
Oh, and I love
so,
that.
So there's quite a lot of activity around me, so I hope there's no audio bleed, as we say in the industry.
Did you say you're coming into us from? Is that a British-ism?
I feel like that's what they always said it on news broadcasts back into the day. Coming into you from, it does sound a bit lewd now you mentioned it.
Yeah, it sounds awesome. I love it. I wish that was an American thing too. That rules. Awesome. Yeah. We were just talking about Soho House. Soho
Happy
House
memories.
Works, which is like their WeWork, but fancier, I guess, than WeWork.
Exactly.
What's like the membership annually to like Soho House?
Was
it like,
no
like 20,000, 40,000? What is it? More than that?
Their global domination plans. It's funny. I was with an Italian friend, and Soho House has belatedly opened in Rome, and everyone in Italy is very excited. And they have a global no nuts policy in Soho House because of nut allergies. And apparently now it's becoming very chic at parties in Rome not to serve nuts because that's what happens at Soho House.
Wow. That's the influence.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Quite amazing.
Let's see. If you got the all houses option and you say you use the main
Which you need,
Soho
Miles.
House. Yeah, you gotta go everywhere.
Like what? I'm going to be in Rome this weekend for a night and I'm not going to stop at the Soho House?
Are you under 27? That's a question. Annual cost? Oh, $4,899.
Huh. I hasten to add for Soho Works.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, it's always funny to see because like every time I've been to like the Soho House in LA for like an industry thing, I'm always amazed at the people. I'm like, wait, people are paying money to be here? Like here? Okay. I mean, I get it because it's so industry, like it's so tapped in. Like I know that LA people are like, they just want to be up in it wherever. But got to say, it just feels like, I don't know,
Like, you know that anecdote I always tell about Tom Cruise coming up the stairs while I'm coming down, and he's just like hovering like a vampire above the stairs. He just like seems to be off the ground. Like, his height is not the thing you notice. The thing you notice is that he like moves around like Dr. Manhattan with just like sheer charisma. That happened at a Soho house. I don't belong to the Soho house, but I know people who do.
That's where you see things like that.
That's where you see shit like that.
Oh, wow. It costs so much more if you're under 27. Okay. They treat it like a rental car. They're like, if you're under 27, we don't want you in our exclusive
club. Yeah. What do they think's going to happen?
That you're going to piss all over the furniture because you're a baby.
That is going to happen, actually. Would have for me as a 27-year-old. Oz, you have a new show about murders that happened in the 80s in Miami. Not surprisingly, cocaine, not far away from it, the CIA. But what, can you tell us a little bit about the show? What interested you about this story?
Yeah, so the show is called Silence the Radio Murders, and it's about the unsolved murders of four radio DJs, or radio journalists, in fact, in Miami in the early 90s. And what's kind of interesting is that all of the crimes were treated basically individually, and the victims were perhaps predictably smeared as being involved in drugs, which they weren't. They were all Haitian exiles who'd moved to Miami fleeing the Duvalier regime. And the killings happened at this incredibly hopeful moment for Haiti when they had their first ever democratically elected president in 1991. And these guys in Miami were using their radio shows to promote this president, Aristide, to raise money for him, to mobilize the community. And then they got murdered one by one. And in the meantime, there was a military coup that overthrew Aristide. The military figures who led the coup, it turned out later, were all on the payroll of the CIA at the time, and also major narco traffickers. Yes. And the radio guys in Miami were calling this out on the airwaves when they got killed. So I read a report that my co-host Anna Arana wrote about the crimes in the early 90s, where she called for a federal investigation, where she said this is basically an outrage. And I called her up and I said, whatever happened? And she said, nothing. So we started working on this podcast together.
That, yeah, it's just when listening to it, like, it's, there are those tragedies of history when the people are, you know, fighting for human rights and, you know, trying to speak out in favor of justice, and they get killed and the killer's goal is just like achieved. Like, they're silenced and they get forgotten. And like, we've seen that a lot in the U.S. with people like Fred Hampton and, you know, Malcolm X, and who are killed before they're able to have like the massive impact they surely would have. And yeah, it's wild that you found an example like that that is just still unsolved, which I guess that's also the case with Fred Hampton and Malcolm X. But
yeah. And this is a small community. I mean, this is little Haiti in Miami, which at the time had about 60,000 people. So if you kill four of the most vocal of those 60,000 and no one is brought to justice, it unfortunately works. And what's particularly bitter is, I would say, the guy Fritz Dohr, who was kind of the leader of this group, who was the second person to be killed, he'd actually fled Haiti on a boat because he'd won this national competition to be a school principal. But he refused to accept his award on stage with baby Dr. Duvalier and basically had to flee. He was on a boat for 14 days. He arrived on December 26th, I think. The boat was almost smashed to pieces by a storm. He got to Miami and he thought, okay, well, I had to leave my family behind, had to leave everything behind, but at least here I can speak freely and call out, you know, the reasons why I had to leave. And of course, he was wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a pretty bracing kind of portrait of like what it's like to live under dictatorship. And like, there's a part where like baby Doc's like henchmen just show up, like start appearing in Miami, and everyone's like, oh fuck. Oh no.
Yeah. I mean, it's
like he has like literal henchmen, like like foot soldiers. Yeah,
they were basically spies, and they compiled this thing evocatively known as the Black Book.
Yeah.
Which had the names of the most vocal enemies of the regime in Miami.
Yeah.
And it was reported back to Haiti, and, you know, go figure.
Wow. Yeah.
The CIA.
They had a hand in that, huh? Especially, I mean, like, when you look at the history of Haiti, of like, you know, the the only place to like sort of liberate themselves. And then the backlash that's happened in the form of like just financial terror. I'm like, oh, and the CIA. Okay. Yeah. They're also part of that to sort of maintain that, that pain campaign.
All right, Oz, we're going to get to know you a little bit better in a moment. First, we're going to tell our listeners a couple of the things we're talking about. The Republicans are mad at Kevin McCarthy for refusing to destroy the economy and like a bunch of jobs and stuff because that would have been good for a presidential election.
They don't know what a default is, but they like the word. That's one thing I've gathered. Like, well, it should have defaulted. They're defaulting on the default, and that's
we
the true
default.
Yeah.
So okay. My default here is that we should be defaulting. So we'll just talk about the fallout from the potential deal. Taylor Swift concerts are causing mass amnesia, apparently. This is just a weird story that I, as somebody who has suffered from like, I don't know, like weird little bouts of memory loss, especially in the past like 5-7 years. This is really interesting to me because there's like Psychology Today articles about like what could be the cause of this and how memory works. And a lot of the ways that they're saying memory works is not like what I was taught. So
it has nothing to do with her fans trying to like memory hole like that she's with Maddie Healy.
No, it seems like it has more to do with them.
The concert itself?
Being so blissed out by the concert that they can't. Truly like the great, the best. This all might be a viral marketing stunt for the Taylor Swift tour.
But it's so good you won't remember.
It's so good. It will obliterate your frontal lobe or whichever lobe stores memories. We're going to talk about 83-year-old sex machine Al Pacino is expecting a new baby.
Oh, no.
I have a loose theory about the Pacino De Niro.
Pacino, I like
the
that.
The Pacino. I ship them. That's my loose theory. I ship them. I want them to be together. They're competitive with each other, and that's why he's having a baby at 83, because De Niro just had a baby.
Right.
That's the whole theory, basically.
No, okay.
All of that, plenty more. But first, Oz, we do like to ask our guests, what is something from your search history?
Well, I recently got married to
thank
you so much,
congrats,
to a German woman. And so I've been trying to learn German. I do weekly, an hour a week on Zoom. And so my German teacher said, I think you're ready to graduate from ABCs. And so she instructed me to Google Deutsche Krimis, which means German crime mysteries. And so I ordered a German crime mystery book for beginners and excitedly tore it open from the Amazon packaging. And then unfortunately couldn't understand a single word. So it was a very disappointing experience.
But, you're like, here we go.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, okay, I'm ready for the big leagues now. Sadly not, but hopefully one day I'll be able to understand my crime.
And do you start with like teenage, like young adult crime novels when like you're learning a new language? Are they like, all right, here is the equivalent of like Judy Blume. You're going to need big words, like the font size to be big and the words to be small.
Embarrassingly, these are actually made for beginner German learners, and so I should really be able to understand it, but it was a truly devastatingly underwhelming experience of encounter with my language skills.
I love the like the enthusiasm, like, yes, here we go. We're gonna I've graduated. I'm totally get this. You're like, eine Nacht in Munich? No.
Exactly. I was like, I don't really understand any of the vocabulary. She's like, that's okay if you have to look up like one in every 10 words. And I was like, nah, it's more like one in every two.
I'm actually sobbing over the book right now because I'm so disheartened.
But I'm looking forward to the memory conversation, because apropos neuroplasticity, it's definitely much harder than it was in high school. Is one thing I've learned about learning languages.
Because you're a polyglot, aren't you? Are you bilingual?
Not a polyglot at all, no, but I learned French and Spanish in high school, and it was definitely way, way easier.
Yo French and Spanish, yeah.
Os. Yo también. Os.
Or in Southern California, yo tambi.
Tambi.
Yo tambi.
Brother. What is something you think is overrated?
Well, I was racking my brains on this, and actually, Miles, your comment about wearing shoes really resonated with me. I actually hate wearing shoes.
And, there you go.
I was reminded, being in this glass bowl at Soho Works, I used to work for a branding and strategy agency, and we had a meeting that I thought went quite well, and then my boss called me into a one-on-one huddle afterwards, which I wasn't sure what the message was going to be, but he was like, "We all saw you, including the client, carrying your shoes around outside the meeting room. Please, please at work, always keep your shoes on." I was like, you know what? Very embarrassing, but probably fair enough.
Wait, so were you going like sockless, like full on?
No,
bare
I had
feet?
Socks. I had red socks, which is a terrible British habit. And just thinking I was, you know,
nice low
without
key,
a care in the world,
bright red
wandering
socks,
laptop in one hand, shoes in the other. Which
I feel like I guess sometimes when I take my shoes off, I've been at that place. I'm like, man, get these fucking shoes off, and then like I'll walk to like the office kitchen in like my socks. But the only time I remember getting in, because I've been in a similar situation, people are like, "You're not wearing shoes." I'm like, "You act like I'm in bare feet."
yeah.
Like,
it's different.
It's different. I'm at least respecting. Yeah. Like I'm having some kind of foot covering on. I just don't like the structure of my shoe, and it's more comfortable. So please leave me alone, and I'll go back into my office and look at Reddit.
That's one of the always that those articles every summer, which is like, what's the correct etiquette on the airplane based on the frontline experience of the cabin attendant or host or hostess? And the advice is always, you're allowed to take your shoes off, but not your socks. But you have to take your shoes back on before you go to the bathroom, which I'm often keen to do.
yeah. You don't want to wear towels on your feet to go into a bathroom. That's what a sock becomes at that point. But yeah, I'm sorry. I'm like looking. There's a fly flying around here, and I'm.
Oh,
trying
I thought
to, like,
there was a bird in the miles.
Nah, I'm about to shit, Clyde Frazier this motherfucker. Like I'm like
catch it
this
real
shit,
slow,
shake it up,
around in your hand, then release
just,
it.
Just release it back in the room and let it start all over again. But. Yeah. No, like,
I am a big shoes on energy just for everyone. I have ugly feet that smell bad.
Okay.
So I've always kept my shoes on, and I've always looked upon people who just sit down on an airplane and take their shoes off with wonder and awe.
Well, my shit smell good. So I don't.
That's
I'm
great.
I'm never uncasing some stinky feet. I'll keep the socks on because it's cold on the airplane. Like people who go bare feet in the fucking plane. No, that's a violation. I will say that is a violation.
An FAA violation, yeah.
Yeah, 100%.
I cleared out an entire dorm floor in a basketball camp when I was like 12 years old with like my socks.
Oh, no.
Like
that happened to
like the other wing of the dorm. They're
that's
like,
so funny.
What is that shit?
That happened to me in fifth grade. Not me, but a kid in my school. We went to this like camp. And like we were in these dorms and his shoes smelled so fucking bad. Like everyone lost their minds and it kind of turned into like a low key bullying thing.
Yeah.
They're like, yo, this motherfucking feet stink. And it was like he cried and shit. And I remember like, oh, damn, I'm glad my feet don't smell because that's how they get you.
Yeah. It was definitely formative. And that's why I wear boots to bed. Even when I sleep, I keep my boots on.
I know. I remember when we were on tour once. You're like, hey, do you have like some garbage bags and duct tape? And I'm like, for what?
I will frequently, even if you're in a hotel with like the windows that only open a crack, I will hang my socks out the window. I've
get the
lost
foot spray.
Many a sock.
Yeah. Get the foot spray because
no, I do,
like to go,
and they're
you
actually
know?
Not that bad okay, anymore. Right. It's just, but I'm pretty self conscious about it.
Right, but the pain has already the trauma has already
the
occurred.
Pain
so there's
is
no,
there.
The pain is already.
Oz, what's something you think is underrated?
Well, I think this will be music to the ears of our overlords at iHeartRadio, but I'm going to say broadcast radio.
For real.
Yeah.
Because
AM radio brought the rise of the far right in America.
That is probably sadly true. But on the other hand, the transistor radio in Latin America, I think, was a big driver of different leftist revolutions. And in Haiti, radio was absolutely huge, remains huge. And so when these victims of these crimes arrived in Miami, it was kind of interesting because there were these brokered radio stations where different like communities could basically buy airtime by the hour. And so you would have like a cookout or, you know, whatever else. And these Haitian arrivals basically started buying airtime and using the airtime to play music and stuff, but also to report on what was going on in their community in Miami, which was completely overlooked by all of the mainstream news outlets, and also to call out the abuses and what was going on at home in Haiti. And so It was pretty cool. Just, I mean, obviously it had a very tragic ending, but the idea of being able to take this like mass media tool into your hands and turn it into a weapon was kind of cool. And literally one of the sources said, you know, they had the guns, but we had the microphones. And so I was pretty inspired by just hearing about how this exile community found the only broadcast and communication technology available to them and use it as a tool to organize and to call out abuses and stuff. So yeah, I learned a lot about the history of radio reporting the show, and some inspiring stuff in there alongside the obviously hellish hellscape of AM radio and conservative talk, which...
Yeah, why is it all conservative shit in the US? Do you have theories on that after doing the reporting on like how it operates in other countries?
I guess conservatives must just love that crackling of the AM dial. No, it's a really good question. I don't know. I mean, I think it's... You know, I guess the conservative answer may be something like it was hard to get booked on mainstream media before Fox. And so like AM radio was the only place they could be. And in fact, I think it wasn't like somebody was, I think I read something, maybe it was when I was preparing to come on your show last time when you got sick, Jack, but it was about, was it Tucker or somebody else complaining about how electric cars didn't have AM radio dials? And this was seen as an assault on conservative values.
That was something recent.
Which obviously I don't think is the reason they don't have AM radios in electric vehicles. But it's a very, you know, cheap and efficient communication mechanism, and yeah, I guess one way you can reach an audience without having to like participate in any system.
Yeah,
right. And I think the other thing is that like AM radio lends itself to like the call-in style, like talk radio, whereas FM doesn't. And that is like those dynamics, like just in the market of it, just it becomes a completely different animal.
Yeah,
you know, like that's like why you get Rush Limbaugh and like that whole kind of thing, where it's just like you're now doing this whole, you're performing for just a gigantic audience constantly rather than like being Casey Kasem popping in between like hits.
But leftists are also not frequently booked in mainstream media and also
100%
disenfranchised. And it's
an interesting question. I mean, I guess Democracy Now was a radio call-in show, but I don't know if that's AM or FM. Amy Goodman.
That's FM.
FM.
Yeah. NPR, I guess, might be the sad answer to the question of, you know.
It was interesting. At the time, they were like pro-military and anti-military radio stations, and the anti-military radio stations were way more popular. And the anti-military broadcasters actually like successfully organized a boycott and got the pro-military broadcasters taken off the AM dial in Miami. And that's when things really started to go like into overdrive, and like they were getting death threats called into their radio shows and people turning up with guns. And so like there was really a battle for control over the airwaves in Miami, which unfortunately turned physical.
Yeah.
Yeah. In America, when you try and do a leftist radio station, like the hosts get murdered.
Yeah.
Sounds like
No, there's like Tom Hartman, who like has like a progressive radio show, has like been he writes constantly about how like the left needs to have a comparable tool, because it's just the, you know, AM radio, talk radio is completely dominated by those conservative radios, and when they do, they just think it's like interviewing people, which is completely different than what like what talk radio is.
Interesting. Well, somebody who works for like an iHeartRadio or something should do something about that.
Right now, I think all we got are the podcasts. We're carving out our little fucking nook right now.
Let's take a quick break and we'll be right back to talk about the news.
Zeit Gang, customers are rushing to your store, but do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it, you know, like a literal POS? Well, you need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into one source of truth. Connect with customers in line and online. Look, you want to use TikTok? Well, guess what? They have plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns on platforms just like that. Get hardware that fits your business, take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Now, I was looking at Shopify.com, and I'm trying to get some answers. Let's say, you know, I had a bustling retail business, and I need, you know, maybe some hardware to be able to sell my wares on the street, take credit card payments, whatever. And I know Shopify is easy to use. Half the time I buy something online, I'm like, oh, yep, they're using Shopify. And if you need to learn more, check out their website. It's super easy to navigate, whether you have questions about how you can optimize your inventory or, again, looking for hardware to make sales easier. Shopify.com has all of that. Just go there. Check it out. So sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/TDZ, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/TDZ to take your retail business to the next level today. Shopify.com/TDZ.
You like to watch new stuff, right, Zygang? I know I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new. Because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump. Join Lisa and her hand-selected staff at Chateau Rosabelle, a glamorous estate in the French countryside, as they live, work, and play together 24/7. Vanderpump Villa is where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. And don't miss the new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course. And season 5 promises new horizons for the entire Kardashian clan. And if you're looking for steamy streams, check out Grand Cayman Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set on the tropical Caribbean island of Grand Cayman, where the rich come to play. But be warned, it's a small island. And secrets don't stay secret for long. So come check out what's new on Hulu this month. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
And we're back. And so seems like McCarthy might have the votes to push
like
the deal through to raise the debt ceiling, avoid a catastrophic default. And, you know, but the far right is trying to apply pressure in their own way.
They're really, I mean, I think there's a lot of fun when you look at what's going on with Kevin McCarthy, because, you know, he gave a lot away to become the speaker. If you remember, remember how many times they had to vote and it was like, nah. And then he kept going around and people was like, please, man, what do you want? Like, I'll fucking do anything. I'm just like, you can be speaker for a day, whatever. And so one of the big things that, like, you know, that he sort of gave as an assurance to the conservatives, especially in the House Freedom Caucus, were like, you're going to work with Joe Brandon. And we hate that. Is he's like, hey, look, if I run afoul, you guys can trigger a vote of no confidence and you could have me. You know, just get me out of here, whatever you want to do. So just keep that in mind as we talk about all of this. So they're really losing it. And what's really interesting is that, you know, a lot of the Republicans are talking about the default in a way that they don't think that eventually it's going to be experienced by all people in the United States. Like, they think it's just like an optics thing that if Joe Biden loses, then like, oh, it's great, rather than like the real consequences of like doubling the unemployment rate or people's stonks going fucking poof. But you know what? Donald Trump told them that default was good. And I just want to play this little clip from Chip Roy, you know, from the Freedom Caucus. And the logic
Forgotten
here.
Member of Succession. Chip
yes.
Roy?
Yeah, Chip yeah. Roy. Yeah, exactly. He's Connor's other brother, who they didn't really talk about much. I just want to play this for you, because his whole thing is like saying like, we can't do this deal because Donald Trump said no. And that's about it. But just listen for yourself, because, and he has no idea. I guess he's completely divorced from the reality of what default means for the economy.
President Trump said he thought we should default rather than pursue this kind of lunacy. At the end of the day, the only person that would default in this town is Joe Biden, unless Republicans default on the American dream by voting for this bad bill.
Huh?
That is why this group will oppose it. We will continue to fight it today, tomorrow, and no matter what happens, there's going to be a reckoning about what just occurred unless we stop this bill by tomorrow.
The only person that's going to default is Joe Biden. Interesting. Because again, they're playing fucking hot potato with a fucking ticking economic time bomb. And they're like, and then he'll have it. And then poof, it's all on him. But again, that was a lot of really cool use of the word default. But it was actually just a wonderful tossed word salad for all to enjoy. And many of the Freedom Caucus members are doing everything they can to try and tank the bill. But it seems that McCarthy has the votes. So now, like, they're just trying to poison the well as much as possible or have these, like, really low energy attacks. Let me play another one from South Carolina's Ralph Norman, who I think is admitting that he is unable to actually read the written word, I believe, is what he's trying to say with this appearance on Fox News. So he's going to come in, talk. His biggest criticism right now, aside from we shouldn't be working with Joe Biden, is that it's just too long. Like, it's just such a big bill and we don't have enough time to read it. Keep in mind, like, the other bills have been in the thousands of pages, and he's going to get fact checked a little bit here on like why he's like, there's no way we can vote on this, because all he's trying to say is we can't vote on this, but has the worst, you know, logical excuse here.
The negotiated bill that we hadn't even read. It's like the Pelosi days. You got to pass it before you can read it.
Is giving you 72 hours to consider it before you're asked to vote on it.
Pelosi didn't do that, and that's what the part of the 20 of us that did in January, we got that. But really, for this serious of a bill affecting the dollars that it is and the financial security, which is national security, we ought to have a lot more time. And I think the date
it's only 99 pages.
It's
only 99 pages, not the 2,000 plus that the Affordable Care Act was.
Well, and yeah, the one of the Biden bills was 4,180 pages that we had less time to read.
All right,
he just fell asleep mid-sentence.
I'm going to bail you out there, Ralph Norman. It's again, but I love the duality of like holding so many of these thoughts to be true. On one end, it's like, yeah, fuck it, default, because that'll fucking make Joe Biden look bad. But also like, but this is like, with the severity, the seriousness of the financials and blah, blah, blah. It's like, well, which one is it? Does it not fucking matter if you default, or is it that you have to read the bill because everything is so important? Again, that's just where they are, because all they need is some kind of financial crisis to win in 2024. That's their entire strategy right now, is some kind of crisis, because it can't just be us saying we don't believe in body autonomy.
Right.
I wonder if they're still counting on their friends in Saudi to cut the oil production for the gas prices.
There's a few different levers, but at the end of the day, it's not going to be because they change their policies or their platform. It's like, make everything so untenable that they have to say yes to fascism. I think that's kind of the playbook they're trying to run. But again, here's the funny part though, is that like now with all of this like outrage, it's possible a lot of people are talking about like, maybe we do fucking vote Kevin McCarthy out as speaker. Which would be so funny, because he wanted so badly to be speaker, and then he would probably come begging to Hakeem Jeffries as the Democratic minority leader to be like, can you give me some votes so I can be the speaker? In which case, it's just going to be total chaos. Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember that smile on his face when he won after like the 20th time. And it was just like, well, this smile will not last for very long. So turn that.
No, unfortunately. Because, he's out here, praising Joe Biden and stuff. And the Republicans just can't stomach it. Meanwhile, like all the progressives in the Democratic Party are also like, man, fuck this bill. So, But I think right now, most of the attention is going on Kevin McCarthy.
Yeah. All right.
Well deserved.
Let's, speaking of smile on their face, let's talk about Taylor Swift. Her concerts are sweeping the nation. Everybody's excited on social media, and they're so excited they're apparently suffering from mass amnesia, because some Taylor Swift fans are reportedly attending Taylor Swift concerts and then have no memory of the event afterwards. It's called, by people on social media, not by the medical community. they're calling it post-concert amnesia. And
so what are people saying? That they're just like, are they truly like, I don't know what happened?
Yeah. One person claimed that if it hadn't been for a video of her at the show, she would have told everyone that it didn't happen. Another person said she had spent so long dreaming about what it would be like to see the singer in person. She later claimed she couldn't grasp what was reality. It's hard to put together what you actually witness. Wow. So I don't know. Has Taylor Swift? Someone I've seen so there was a tweet that was like one of my tweets of the day that was like comparing the like stage design to the really complicated shirts from season two of I Think You Should Leave.
Dan Flash's.
Yeah, Dan Flash's really super complicated shirt patterns.
Yeah, they're more expensive.
More expensive because the patterns are so complicated. And like her stage design looks pretty complicated. So I don't know if she's like done something that has like, I've never heard someone say it's hard to put together what you actually witness
right
before.
Part of me is thinking like one version is like hyperbole from fans to talk about how amazing it was that
right
you're like literally I don't even know what happened, it was so magical. But like, are there actual people like, no, I'm actually worried, like I don't know what happened. You know what I mean? Like, is it more like on that level, or is it more like it was such a dream, like I don't know if I was just out of body or whatever? Or I guess, or they're saying like, it's hard for me to specifically even call back something from the concert. I know I was there, but that's about it. After that, I just went into an absolute dream state.
If the CIA were to align itself with an artist, I feel like that would probably be the correct, like that would be the choice. Taylor Swift.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Right?
Oh, yeah.
I think so. But it's a little, I mean, if the idea is that it's such a transporting and extremely magical experience that you're literally not able to form memories, it makes it a little disappointing that I've certainly never, I don't think I've ever experienced that. I've definitely been drunk enough that I don't remember what happened in college.
Right.
But the idea that it has such a transcendent experience that you can't remember it kind of makes you wonder, like, what am I... I'm missing out on the highs of life by not being a big Taylor stan.
Now I'm getting like FOMO because like I've seen artists that I've absolutely obsessed over.
Yeah,
and been like, I'm there. I'm going to be front row. And I remember that shit. Like, it was magical. Like, I was like, I'm here. I'm experiencing it exactly how I want to. But yeah, to your point, I'm like, so is there like another level? Like
another level. It's like, Easter egg.
Are these people just getting really drunk for the first time? Like, it was crazy. I like had 7 to 12 drinks and now I get... No, so according to one psychology professor, this is something that can happen when someone is in a highly emotional state. Due to exciting or distressing factors, the neurons associated with memory start firing indiscriminately, which makes forming new memories difficult, which is the opposite of what, like, I had always heard when you're in like a heightened emotional state, you are more likely to like have a like flashbulb memory, you know, like that's when you have those memories that really stick because you're like have this heightened state of arousal.
Don't tell that to Ron DeSantis, who's denying people from Guantanamo recognized him.
Right.
How are they going to remember that? It's like, I don't know, man. People remember shit in those moments. That's what I know.
Some people claim not to remember parts of their own wedding is the example that they're giving. So it's like, I've noticed this like with being a dad. Like I will look at a video that I've taken of my kids and it's,
you're like
just ooh. There. I'm like, I don't remember that at all. They? I don't remember saying those words at all. I don't remember my kids looking like that. because I'm so like that has to do with just like I see them every day. So like what they look like is just what they've always looked like in my brain. But you know, I think there's something there that's like missing from my understanding of memory. Because the only thing that I had, the only interaction between memory and emotional state that I've really had room for in like the thing that I built in when I was like a teenager based on like accepted knowledge was that like scared or excited your memory like works better. So, but, and then really drunk, your memory doesn't work. Those were the two things that I knew of that could affect your memory.
That's my psych degree.
And then like, there was also the stuff about, you know, repressed memories of abuse or traumatic experiences. But like, I had always kind of, because a lot of that stuff ended up being recovered through hypnosis and like led to it, involved in a lot of the satanic panic stuff. Mm-hmm. But it does seem like there's a little more here where like there are forms of heightened memories or like excitement or, you know, like with my kids, it's like the love is so strong, like my brain can't look directly like it's like trying to look directly at the sun or something. Your brain just like isn't big enough to take it all in, is like kind of how it feels. So maybe that's what they're experiencing with Taylor Swift concerts.
Maybe there's a new merch opportunity, like the spinning coin in Inception that could be sold to Taylor Swift fans before the concert, so they knew that
they're really here. Yeah, right,
exactly.
Because she's a master of like repackaging things they already have and be like, what about this version? It's only available for 24 hours and it has half a song on it that you haven't heard. How about that? Buy that. But yeah, maybe she does still like start selling like reality totems. It's like, if it keeps spinning, you know what's going on. Which is funny because when you say that, Jack, the first thing I was like, well, does this happen at Beyonce concerts? Because that's the only other group of people who I feel like I get the Swiftie connection. Like these people, the parasocial relationships that they have with Taylor Swift is to the next level. So like I can tell that they're already like operating in like a psychological space that might be different than other fandoms. But it's interesting because the only thing I was like, I just searched Beyonce post-concert amnesia and an article just came out 10 hours ago. Beyonce fans also getting post-concert amnesia at Renaissance. So I'm like, is this a marketing thing? Like, what the fuck is this?
Could just be a few people on Twitter reported not being able to remember something and everybody jumped on it. But I mean, there are psychology professors and like this Psychology Today article claiming that like this Psychology Today article totally does not vibe with like how I feel like my memory works. They're like, you focus on experiencing the world, not remembering it. So if people are truly living in the moment and enjoying the concert, they're not necessarily doing the work of trying to make new memories. It's like, I don't intentionally ever make memories. I'm not like, oh, I'm remembering this so fucking hard right now.
Jack, you remembering right now?
God damn. This is good remembering that's happening. But yeah, so I don't know. But like,
all I take from this is I have FOMO that I've never blacked out at a concert. Like that wasn't chemically induced.
I blacked out at a concert for understandable reasons. Yeah.
Okay. That wasn't me abusing Xanax or some shit.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like I'm talking about like I'm fucking levitating because I love the artist so much. And now what is it, Swifties? Again, or I'm part of me, like the jokey side of me is like, I think they just want to forget that she's with Maddie Healy and all that that's happening right now.
Right.
Anyway.
But is the concert like, I guess it's hard to ask this question because you can't really, but like, are people saying it's like a really great concert who aren't like inherently huge Taylor Swift stans?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, the people who I know who are Taylor Swift fans who have gone, I feel like everything's been so like no one is saying a bad word about it.
Yeah.
Obviously, because the tickets were so fucking expensive and hard to get. I think that's the other part of it too, is like, you're probably so stressed because you spend like a fucking mortgage payment and a half trying to get a ticket to the show.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, the other thing is too, people are wearing adult diapers to the shows.
No.
Yeah.
Really?
Because they don't want to miss a thing. Like, there's a bunch of TikTok clips of like people helping their homegirls like get into some diapers. Oh, another person was like taking a selfie video. It's like, I'm at the show and nobody knows I have diapers on.
And then you like move back and they're clearly wearing diapers like under their skinny jeans. Like, yo, actually.
Yo, something going on with your yoga pants. I'm seeing a thin blue line appear in the front, like a baby's diaper. But yeah, like, again, I get that part. Like, I think I've told this story. I peed myself at the front row of Jay-Z at Coachella a few, like 10 years ago, because I didn't want to miss anything. And when I saw how far I would have to travel to go to the restroom and then fight through a fucking gigantic pit to get to where I was like, nah, we doing this right here.
Yeah.
So
and also, we already mentioned everything about you smell. Your pee smells fantastic. So it didn't
matter. I'm very well hydrated. You know what I mean? Yeah. You're not going to get that like that sort of terrible like ureic acid. Oh, yeah. No. Not with me. It's basically water, baby.
All right. Let's take a quick break and we'll be right back.
You like to watch new stuff, right, Zygang? I know I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new. Because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump,
Join Lisa and her hand-selected staff at Chateau Rosabelle, a glamorous estate in the French countryside, as they live, work, and play together 24/7. Vanderpump Villa is where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. And don't miss the new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course. And season 5 promises new horizons for the entire Kardashian clan. And if you're looking for steamy streams, check out Grand Cayman Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set on the tropical Caribbean island of Grand Cayman, where the rich come to play. But be warned, it's a small island. And secrets don't stay secret for long. So come check out what's new on Hulu this month. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher. I'm so excited to tell you about the brand new series of The Girlfriends. In season 1, we told you about the murder of Gail Katz at the hands of my ex-boyfriend, Bob. At one point, a woman's torso washed up on Staten Island and was misidentified as Gail. She spent 9 years in Gail's grave, and then she just disappeared.
It's almost like it's become this moral obligation to find her.
And that's what we're going to do. Find this missing girlfriend and tell her story. With the help of some of your favorite girlfriends from season 1, like my producer, Anna.
Oh, my God.
My friend, Dr. Mindy Shapiro.
Hi, it's Dr. Shapiro, and I'd like to speak with the deputy medical examiner.
And, of course, Gail's sister, Elaine Katz.
Having no closure, it kills you.
Join us as we try to solve a 35-year-old cold case. It's not going to be easy, but it's going to be one hell of a ride.
What?
I can't believe this.
Listen to season 2 of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back.
Jack, is there artists you would go to the bathroom on yourself for? Who would you wear adult diapers for?
Radiohead, Kendrick.
I thought you said Hendrix.
Hendrix, bro.
Oh, no, Jack.
Yeah, those are kind of the big ones. Radiohead, I've seen a number of times, and they're always great. And Kendrick, I've never seen, so I really want to see.
I remember, actually, on the subject of, I didn't have any diapers, but I encountered a video game arcade machine for one of the first times. I was about 9 or 10 years old, and I was so delighted by it. Maybe I was a bit younger, maybe 6 or 7, but definitely wet myself while playing the game. And
because out of pure excitement, or you're like, I can't let this go.
I couldn't. I was like beating level 2, and I was like, I can't let this go.
I get it.
But totemic memories, maybe the soiled diaper could be the clue as to whether or not you were really there.
Yes.
For Taylor's, that's right. For Taylor's concerts.
Just everyone strap on an adult diapy, and then, you know?
Are we assuming this is mainly number one, or some number two action in the...
You put on the diapers, and then you blink, and suddenly the diaper is full, and you're back at your house with, like, a glow bracelet around your wrist.
Oh, no.
Full diaper. Like, what is that smell?
I was there.
No, you were experienced.
No.
Jimmy
Where
Kendrick.
Were we?
Where were we?
Where I were mean, we?
Chris Christie is going to announce his doomed presidential run, I guess, in next Tuesday in New Hampshire. So
see you next Tuesday,
Chris. Yeah. We'll all look forward to that, Chris.
What does he think he's going to do? Just debase himself and humiliate himself all over again like he did in 2016?
That is the main thing that this news has brought is like people being like, so what's the play here? Like, what does he think he's doing? Because it ain't winning. Yeah, he's definitely not going to win. But does he know that? Does he know he's not going to win? Some people are theorizing that he is being asked by other Republicans to come in as like the sniper who can insult Trump. So right. He comes in and during the debate, he smears Trump and that allows Nikki Haley and like DeSantis and all the other people who aren't willing to continue to run without. So
that is the dumbest idea I've ever heard. Whoever yes. even that's not doesn't even make sense politically. It's like, well, you be mean to him so the other people don't have to. It's like, well, Trump's just going to tear their asses down, too. So then what?
Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly. Is Christie going to be like, hey, leave Nikki alone, motherfucker. Like, yeah. He's not. Yeah. He's going to fold like a motherfucking like a fucking chair at an AA meeting. That's what's going to happen. He's going to collapse and that's all that's going to happen. And the only thing I can think of is that his ego, like people are gassing him up and yeah. he's on some Jimmy Butler like revenge shit where he's like, I know I was humiliated, but this time I'm going to go so hard. I may be able to win.
Yeah. Don't do that to Jimmy Butler, man. Come on.
But you know what I mean? Like, I think he may have that yeah. in his mind. Like he said, he's going to go so hard this time that maybe he can win, because that's the one thing we've said, the person with the most interesting chance is whoever can go the hardest at Trump.
Yeah. But and none of them can do that. Christie, maybe people are theorizing he can, he cannot. He is not built for it. But yeah, I mean, like, the idea that he will come in the debate and like take Trump down a notch or two is ridiculous, because like, you know, Trump supporters are not waiting for the right piece of information to be revealed to then like be like, oh, I guess we were wrong. Like that, right. That's not the thing. But I don't doubt that that could be like something that other candidates are hoping will happen, because we've seen like misguided strategy, political strategies all the time. But the thing that makes me highly skeptical that he is like basically lead blocker for DeSantis, Pence, Haley, and others is that like that is just not how narcissistic megalomaniacs operate. Like, he is not doing this because he thinks it will benefit somebody else. He is doing it because he thinks it will benefit him, because he thinks he has an outside chance, I'm sure.
Maybe he'll get Rick Santorum's chair on CNN as the reward for his his efforts.
I mean, he's already on CNN. He already has everything.
He's already got everything you could want. Dream of, yeah.
Yeah.
You have to wonder, I mean, I guess he's going to raise some money. I mean, it's these entirely quixotic decisions where they come from. And I mean, yeah, the idea of him
there's already
a white knight in this scenario is not very plausible.
It looks like there's a gigantic super PAC already set up for him. So there's clearly the donor class thinks there's something about him running that could help. I don't know in what way, but I don't know. I mean, like, I don't know. It'd be interesting. I'm curious to see if anyone has what it takes to get Trump like a little bit frazzled with their like rhetorical style, like Trump does with his. Like, I don't know. Like, if Chris Christie was just super like sarcastic on a debate stage, would that help? He's like, yeah, Donald, that's a really good idea, guy. Like, what does that do? Like, versus Donald Trump is an un-American tyrant doing that kind of thing, like trying to be like speaking truth to power. I don't know. I feel like you have to be like, yeah, sure, you baby. Like, take the discourse there. But
there are probably people who would be successful at that. They're probably not career politicians.
No, so. No. Yeah. I mean, that'd be a fun thing to be a plant, just to like blow up the debate stage every time. Yeah. Anyway, Koch brothers. If you're interested, I'm willing to offer my services to debase myself on a debate stage.
There you go. All right. Well, Oz, it's been such a pleasure having you on the Daily Zeitgeist. Where can people find you, follow you, hear you, all that good stuff?
Well, I got a Twitter at Oswald Oshin, and the podcast is called Silence the Radio Murders, which you can find wherever you get your podcasts, including, of course, the iHeartRadio app.
Of course. Where we all listen to our podcasts.
Of course. I should download that, actually.
but thank you so much for having me back on back on the show.
Thanks for doing it.
It was a pleasure.
Is there a work of media that you've been enjoying?
Well, I'm not sure if you followed the Radiolab guy, Latif Nasser's tweet thread about the Afghan violinist. It was about a month ago, but basically he got asked to bring a violin from the East Coast to the West Coast to give to this Afghan guy. And the guy was kind of hard to pin down, and Latif was annoyed with him, but finally they met up, and he realized when they met up, like, why he was hard to pin down, because he was working, like, you know, four jobs and didn't have, you know, some of the right cell contract or whatever it was. But he gave him the violin, and turned out the guy had been one of the violinists on Afghan Star, which was Afghanistan's answer to American Idol until the Taliban came back in 2021. And now this guy has the violin. And not only that, I think Latif organized this big campaign to raise funds to basically relaunch the guy's music career in the US, which is very heartwarming. And actually, one of our next shows about it at Kaleidoscope is called Afghan Star, and it's all about kind of what happened to the producers and singers from that show, many of whom are now living in Istanbul. So it's an amazing story. It's obviously a sad one, but also kind of uplifting that this music still provides some community. And so, you know, you never know when you're out and about in wherever you live, you know, who the person working at the mall or the Uber driver, I mean, what their story might be. And so, yeah, I was very cheered by that one, and just the, you know, the idea of the power of music. You know, you have to make you forget or you wear diapers when you're listening to it, but I thought that was very moving, and I came across it on Twitter, so shout out to Elon.
God, what if there was just a piece of music that was so good that it made everybody soil themselves
immediately, like, soil themselves.
that's when we'll know peace on earth. I think that's right. Is the dawning of the age of Aquarius, actually.
Miles, where can people find you? What is the work of media you've been enjoying?
Find me at Miles of Gray, where they got at symbols. Find Jack and I. Miles and Jack got Matt Boosties. If you like the NBA talk, that's where we do that. And if you like to hear trash reality talk, I do that with Sophie Alexandra on 420 Day Fiance. Let's see. I don't really have any tweets that I've liked recently. But I will say I just started watching the new season of The Other Two. And that's okay. Shit. It's been bringing a smile to my face. I'm only one episode in, but I'm already fucking... It's just so fucking good, man.
That show is great. Yeah. So I really am enjoying season 3 of I Think You Should Leave, which dropped yesterday.
I'm like, I have a pact with like two friends. Like, are we going to watch it together? If I haven't done this kind of shit since I was a child, or like maybe in college. They'd be like, yeah, we're watching it together.
I needed it yesterday. I just locked myself in my office and watched it for like an hour and a half, and it was great.
Just choking back like all the laughter.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. All good. I like to hear that.
Yeah. Miles has seen What I Think You Should Leave does to me
in and public.
It's not dissimilar to the Taylor Swift thing.
Not really.
A tweet I've been enjoying: Jamie Loftus at Jamie Loftus Help tweeted, "My Algebra 2 teacher has found my book about hot dogs." Again, her book, Raw Dog, The Naked Truth About Hot Dogs, came out last week. And she screencapped this message: "Speak your piece. Saw a piece of you in The Week magazine. I had you as a math student at Brockton. Great to see you doing well. Congratulations. My ask, colon, what? Work the importance of math into your work. It is a big ask, but people need to hear the message. Hope you are well."
Oh,
so if you have ever had a teacher who, you know, you didn't like, or who made you feel badly about yourself, just understand they're probably like socially maladapted weirdo who, you know, would go on social media and be like, "Hey, could you make your next book about math, the thing that I taught you?"
But then it like bums me out, because you know, like, how, like, whatever that teacher is up against, like, kids just don't give a fuck about math no more. Can you put it in your hot dog book?
Yeah. Instead of hot dogs, how about some hot math problems?
How about some hot logarithms?
Hot logs. And then this was the tweet that I think I was referencing yesterday or on a recent episode. Luke at Luke O'Neill 47 tweeted, "Smoking is a gross, deadly habit. Wouldn't recommend it at all. I nonetheless do it and it rules. That said, it is honestly shocking that the anti-smoking campaigns of 20 plus years ago actually worked in the U.S. don't think they would if started now. Real under the wire shit there. It's just crazy how much that. And I don't think, like, Oz, when you go back to Europe, like, is how much more prevalent is smoking there than it is in the U.S.?
It's wild. I mean, especially in France, it's like everyone smoking.
It's still the 80s there. Yeah.
It's still the 80s. Yeah. It's crazy. I can't imagine. I was there quite recently. I was genuinely puzzling this very thing. It's like, how can every young person just smoke the whole time here? It's bizarre, but they do.
Yeah. Anyways, it worked. Those campaigns worked, I guess. Maybe that's why Americans are so miserable. You can find me on Twitter at... That's not the reason, by the way. Don't start smoking. You can find me on Twitter @Jack_O'Brien. You can find us on Twitter at Daily Zeitgeist. We're at The Daily Zeitgeist. On Instagram, we have a Facebook fan page and a website, dailyzeitgeist.com, where we post our episodes and our footnotes, where we link off to the information that we talked about in today's episode, as well as a song that we think you might enjoy. Miles, what is the song that you think people might enjoy?
Oh, man. Let's go out on this track by a Australian producer called Koru. I think I have that right. Yeah, Q-O-R-U. Worked with some other more underground rappers that I had heard of, making beats for them. And then I said, let me see what their solo beat making work is like. And this track is called Rest, off an album called Intoxicated, or it's like a sort of mixtape kind of thing. There is also a remix to Butterfly by Crazy Town. Like, he's sampling Butterfly by Crazy Town in kind of an interesting way. But anyway, this track is called Rest by Koru, Q-O-R-U. Check it out.
There you go. Well, The Daily Zeitgeist is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. That's going to do it for us this morning. Back this afternoon to tell you what's trending, and we'll talk to you all then. Bye.
Bye.
Zeit Gang, you like to watch new stuff, right? I mean, who doesn't? I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. A new season of The Kardashians starring The Kardashians, of course, and Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher, back with another season of the global number one podcast, The Girlfriends. Last time, we investigated the murder of Gail Katz. This time, we're uncovering the identity of the woman who was buried in Gail's grave for a decade before she disappeared. Join me and the rest of the club as we tell her story. Listen to season 2 of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in LA, and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.